Good morning. Are you happy to be here today? Oh, that's good. That's good. I am too. It's good to see you. Well, I want to jump right in because we got a lot I want to talk about this morning. We began a series a few weeks ago that we took a break from last weekend for our, wasn't it a great time last weekend? Thanksgiving, communion gathering, and but we're back this weekend talking about ethos. Say that with me. Ready? Ethos. And as you know, we've been looking at some very, very important words and phrases that we believe reflect the unique ethos of our community, of our tribe. And you know, one of the things you've heard me say from the very beginning is that this is a very, 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 very important series for us. It's very important. Because here's the thing, ultimately, at the end of the day, okay, and this is why it's important, not just for me or for the staff, but this is important for all of us, because, listen, at the end of the day, these words or these phrases or these values that we're talking about, our ethos, all right, this is not just about us as a church community. Really, I think even more importantly, this is about you, and this is about me and us as individuals. Because here's the thing, the truth is these values, or you could say this ethos that we're talking about, is really, at the end of the day, only going to be as strong and as evident in us as a community to the extent that these values are embraced and lived out in each of our lives individually. Are you following me? And so this is important for all of us, all right? Say this after me. This is important for me. And this is especially true, I think, when it comes to the value we're going to talk about today. And that is the value of generosity. Generosity. Would you say that real loud and clear? Ready? Generosity. We're talking about generosity. Now, generosity is a very important value for us because this is a value that's about being people who reflect a very generous Creator. Right? This is about being people who instead of looking at life through the lenses of scarcity and lack, choose instead to celebrate the abundance of God's generosity that He has shown us in our lives. So it's important. Because I think being a generous community, I think, means being people who are quick to say yes to opportunities to be a blessing. Right? And being people who, instead of just waiting around for opportunities to show up to be a blessing, I think this is about being people who proactively look for and search out opportunities to be a blessing. Right? People who don't just sit around, but people who really look for opportunities. I mean, that's the kind of community that, I don't know about you, but that's the kind of community I want to be a part of. Now, on one hand, I would say that there is a lot of evidence of this value being very alive and active here in this community right now. I mean, look, and in fact, it has been for a long time. So many of you, gosh, I mean, I look out and I see your faces, I know this. So many of you, you have served so faithfully. Man, you've come, and times when we've been low on some volunteers, you have pushed through those seasons, you've worked, you've been faithful, you've been consistent. And that's generosity. When you come in here and there are lights on, that just shows that there is generosity at work here at the Orchard, okay? You know, I mean, those of you who've given financially, even when it wasn't easy, you stayed consistent and you gave and you sacrificed. It's generosity. You know, those of you you've jumped on board with different causes and things we've gotten involved with over the years, my gosh, I mean, if you think about these last few years, the opportunities we've had to reach around the world and make a difference. I mean, I'll never forget the time in one weekend when we committed together as a community to support and sponsor 250 children around the world. You know, yeah, isn't that awesome? And then of course not even just that, but things like even our feed the family program we did 16 feeds the family, and things like our GiftMart. I mean, so right here even locally, there is a lot of generosity flowing from this community, and yet I'll also say that it's important we don't get satisfied with that. Right? It's important that we keep pushing. It's important that we continue to allow God to stretch us, right, and to grow us in this area of generosity. And so that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about generosity. And what I really want to do, I think, is I want to challenge us both as, you know, I guess challenge us in terms of where we're at both as a community, but also where we're at individually. In regards to this thing called generosity, all right? Now, to help us get started, I'll share with you some beautiful art of mine. I did a little drawing of this chart, and I want you, it's pretty fancy, as you can see. But let's just for a second call this line, let's just say this line represents, I guess, what we could call the generosity spectrum, okay? And on one end of this spectrum, you have what we could say is like radical generosity, okay? I mean, we're talking, you know, extreme, crazy, you know, you're nuts kind of generosity, right? Sacrificial, nothing like it, total abundance thinking here, okay? This is like if you think of the most generous person you know, when they pop into your mind, times that by 1,000, okay? That's what we're talking about here, all right? So you've got radical generosity on one end of the spectrum. And then, on the other end of the spectrum, we have the complete opposite of generosity, all right? The complete opposite, which really, well, it's greed, right? I mean, would you agree? Greed is like the opposite of generosity, right? Say the word greed. It's an ugly word, isn't it, to say, greed. You know, scarcity, sort of a, this is like, I guess you could say what flows out of, did you see my little mean face? Oh, his mouth is missing. He's like, there's a little guy down there, he's growling. I did that at like 1 a.m. last night. But anyway, and you know, the greed, it's what flows out of this scarcity thinking, right? Of not having enough, this thinking of lack, okay? And so here's the spectrum. Somewhere on this spectrum is you. All right, somewhere on this spectrum is me. We are all somewhere here on this spectrum. All right, and so that's what I want to talk about today. And to help us sort of get into this conversation, I want to take you to two quick stories that I think sort of challenge our thinking and maybe some preconceived ideas we have about generosity. All right, now the first story is one that's found in the Gospel of Mark, all right? And when you have time, go back and read these stories a little more in depth. But the first one is in the Gospel of Mark, Mark chapter 12. And in Mark chapter 12, we have this story where Jesus is at the temple with his disciples, and we're told these words. Let me show you in Mark chapter 12, verse 41. We're told, it says here, Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple, and watched as the crowds dropped in their money. Many rich people put in large amounts. Then a poor widow came and dropped in 2 small coins. First of all, I gotta say, like, this might be one of the best ideas I've ever heard. Jesus sits down by the collection box. Hey, come on. Right, and he's watching, right, as people come in and they drop off their offerings in the box. He's watching. How uncomfortable is that, right? And so we're told that a bunch of rich people come by, drop in large amounts, and then this poor widow comes in and drops in 2 coins. Let's keep reading. Verse 43, we're told Jesus called his disciples to him and said, so he pulls them together. Hey, let me share with you some observations here, okay? He said, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but she, poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on. So Jesus makes quite a point here, doesn't he? Right? He says, okay, see this poor widow? All right, even though she physically gave less, she's actually given more than anyone else, than all these rich people. See, those other guys, they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but this lady who's poor, this poor widow, she's given everything she had to live on, all right? So it's like Jesus saying, look, the guys who gave a lot, they didn't get it. They didn't get it, all right? They were living with this mentality of scarcity, right? They were living in this place of well, you may not have enough, so we got to hold on tighter, right? But then you got this poor widow who she got it, right? She was living in abundance. Now, let me go to the next story, okay? The next story is from Matthew chapter 14. And you guys, if you grew up in church, you know this story. Jesus is teaching this huge crowd of people. Now the scriptures tell us that there were over 5,000 people there, and that did not include women and children, so you do the math, okay? That's a lot. That's a big crowd, right? And so anyway, so they're out in the middle of nowhere. Jesus is teaching this huge crowd. It's going on for a long time. Jesus, maybe he was a little long-winded once in a while, you know, like me. I'm just trying to be like Jesus, see? Okay, anyway. So Jesus is teaching this huge crowd of people. It's been a while now. They're getting hungry. And so the disciples come to Jesus trying to figure out what to do because there's really, you know, there's no food. And so they come to Jesus, and Jesus looks at them and says, and put that scripture away. That's not supposed to be up there yet. Okay. Well, anyway, sorry. I saw it and it distracted me. But anyway, so they come to Jesus, and Jesus looks at them and says, they're like, Jesus, we got to eat. And Jesus looks at them and he says, you feed them. Okay. No problem. Let's go down to Jimmy John's, get us a few number fives. You know, they're like, are you kidding me? How are we going to do that? All right. In fact, one of them said, feed them with what? All right. It would take months to earn enough money to feed all these people. And so what does Jesus say? He says, you know what? You're right. Let's just forget it. Just all go home. No. You know what he does? He looks at him and he says, well, what do you have? What do we have? Go find out. Go take a look. See what we have. So they go and they look. And if you know the story, they end up finding a kid, a little boy, who has 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Well, of course, they see this, and they're, you know, thinking what you and I would think. Well, you know, this isn't enough for anybody, right? And they know, there's thousands of people here. But they go back to Jesus, and they quickly find out that Jesus, frankly, isn't interested in what they can't do. Jesus is interested in what they can do. See, the disciples, they were a little stuck. Probably like most of us would be, honestly, right? They were a little stuck here, right? They were caught up in scarcity thinking. They were caught up in what can't be done. Whereas Jesus is in a totally different place. He's in a place of abundance, right? So you have like two totally different perspectives. They're focused on what they don't have, and Jesus is focused on what they do have. And Jesus says that's where the blessing is. Even if it's a little, that's where the blessing is. Let me show you what he does. Matthew 14, verse 19. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and blessed them. See, that's what God does. I think he blesses the little bit that we have. We think it's about having a lot. It doesn't really mean we have to have a lot. God blesses the little that we do have. And it says that he broke the loaves into pieces, and he gave the bread to the disciples who distributed it to the people. They all ate as much as they wanted, and afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. And it says here about 5,000 men were fed that day in addition to all the women and children. And you know, if all the men were fed, it had to be a lot of food. That's a pretty cool story. And I think these stories are very interesting. Because, think about this for a second. When it's time for Jesus, and whether it was intentional that he was trying to make this exact point, I don't know, but when it comes time for Jesus to certainly make a point about generosity and about abundance, think about who he chooses to show us to illustrate this. He doesn't go to the wealthy. He doesn't go to the people who have a ton of money, at least to show us the right way, right? He doesn't go to someone who had it all figured out. Instead, he goes to a widow and a little boy who hardly had anything. Right? He uses two average, everyday, not even, I mean, at that time, I mean, this is talking kind of fringe people, right? And to make his point here. And you know what I think he's doing by showing us by doing that? I think Jesus is showing us at the end of the day, listen, this is important, at the end of the day, things like scarcity, things like abundance, has actually very little to do with what you have or don't have. Right? Let me say it again. Scarcity and abundance has very little to do with what you have or don't have. Right? See, here's the thing. We see this all over the scriptures, all over the place. It's the same thing. And that is this, okay? The story that you and I are living out here is nothing more than a reflection of whatever story we are embracing in here. Whatever we're living out here is a reflection of what we're embracing in here. And see, sometimes we embrace scarcity, don't we? Right? Scarcity, I mean, imagine how easy it would have been for that little boy to say, no, you can't have my lunch. My mom will kill me if I come home without this. What do I do? We'll be hungry, right? I mean, the widow could have said, man, I would love to, but I'll do it next month. Or I can't give the last of my two. It's all I have. Scarcity. But they chose abundance because that's a story they were living out of internally, right? And so abundance, what does it say? Abundance says something totally, totally different. Because see, abundance isn't about what you have. You know what abundance is about? Abundance really is much more about who you are and how you see the world. Let me say it again, because some of you were distracted right then, all right? Let me say it again. Abundance isn't about what you have nearly as much as it's about who you are and how you see the world. I mean, you can have a lot of stuff. A lot of things. We all know people who have a lot of stuff, and yet, at the same time, you can be bound up and crippled by scarcity, right? And on the other hand, you can be a lot like these two people, this widow and this little boy, who had hardly anything in their name, and yet live in the freedom and joy that comes in when this flow of generosity is happening in your life. It's so easy to get drawn into the story of scarcity, isn't it? So easy. Listen, it doesn't take much. For most of us, it happens without even trying. I mean, look, you know, you get news, right? You even just the threat of something, right? A possibility of a job loss, or, you know, or even just sometimes like on those days when the stock market goes bad, you know, you're just like, oh gosh, what happens, right? But there's like this natural, I think for many of us, this reflex that happens. See, here's the truth. For most of us, when times are tough, most of us will almost always choose scarcity over abundance. Most of us will choose that. And here's the thing. When that happens, when we start living in the story of scarcity, man, our posture begins to change. Our posture turns from being responsive to becoming very reactive. Right? Our posture changes. Our posture becomes one of holding on tighter, right? Everybody go like this right here, and hold real tight, right? That's what we do, right? We hold on tighter, we bury it, we hide it, we keep it to ourselves, because what does scarcity tell us? Scarcity tells us that there won't be enough, and so we have to hold on. It causes people to hold on tightly to things like their time, right? Everybody wants a piece of me, right? And what happens is, well, then because we're afraid we're not going to have enough time to for whatever in our lives, what do? We hold on tighter to it. We hold on so tight that sometimes no one gets a piece of us, including those who really, you know, need it. Right? Or cause us to hold on tighter and tighter to things like our money, our resources. Or even, forget money, even things like encouragement. You know, things as simple as like spending time and actually giving the gift of your presence with someone. We hold on tighter to things like that when we're living out of the story of scarcity. Right? We find it hard to just be present, to give the gift of ourselves. I ran across this great post by Seth Godin this week that I wanted to share with you. I thought it was good. He says this: we're often in a hurry to finish or in a hurry to close a sale. Listen to this. What happens when we adopt the posture of being in a hurry to be generous? Don't you love that? See, when we're living out of the wrong story, when we're living out of that place of scarcity, what happens is we start finding ourselves becoming less and less in a hurry to be generous. We start slowing down. So let's go back to that spectrum. Go ahead and put that back up, Dave. So this generosity spectrum here, all right? Just take a look at that for a second. You've got radical generosity on one hand. And then on the other end of it, you've got the result of scarcity thinking, which is greed, right? As you look at that, I guess really the question to ask yourself is what part of the story do you find yourself living in these days? What part of the story? When you look at this chart, where are you at? Now, my guess is that most of us, we look at this and we would say, and I think we're right probably in saying this, but we would say, well, I'm not greedy, you know? I mean, I'm not Scrooge, right? We think of like these extreme examples, right? We think it's Christmas time, so our mind goes Scrooge. I'm not Scrooge, right? I'm not Gordon Gekko from Wall Street, you know, or the real Gordon Gekko, Bernie Madoff, right? I'm not them, you know. We think the extreme examples. We think like Enron or you know, I don't know. We've all seen the implications of greed. We know, right? We've seen how it leads to arrogance, jealousy, control, obsession. Sometimes war, right? You know, and so sometimes we think of the real extreme examples of greed, and we tell ourselves, well, I don't have to worry about that. And also because I don't have enough money to be greedy. Right? I mean, don't you have to? You gotta have a lot of money in order to be greedy, right? So I don't have to worry about that. And yet, see, that's where we often miss it. Because we associate that with whatever comes into our minds, you know, and we miss it because greed is very subtle. In fact, there's this account in the Gospel of Luke where Jesus is addressing a mostly poor group of people. Very poor group of people. In fact, I mean, much poorer than any of us can, you know, have ever been in our lives, I'm sure. All right? And Jesus is talking to this group of poor people. And you know what he says to them? It's very interesting. Luke 12:14. Let's read it together. You ready? Go. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Now, it's very interesting here because Jesus is speaking to a group of mostly very, very poor people. And he says these words, watch out, be alert, okay? Be careful. And that makes sense. It'd make total sense if he was talking to a bunch of millionaires, right? All right? If that's really who just needed to be worried about it. But he's talking to a group of very poor people. And what does he say to them? He says, watch out. Be on guard against it because greed is very subtle. It has this crazy way of sort of blinding us to its presence in our lives. So let's go back to that generosity spectrum, okay? So we may say, well, I'm definitely not on the far end of the spectrum of greed. And that's probably true of most of us here. You all don't look so greedy. You look pretty nice and stuff, okay? But here's the question. We may not find ourselves there, but I wonder how many of us would say that we are as far over on this side as we'd like to be. Or as we could be. Or maybe here's a better way of asking this question. What direction has your life been moving in as of late? What direction have you been moving in this spectrum of generosity as of late? I mean, I like that question because it's a very now question, isn't it? It's like just as of late, whatever you've been going through, this season of your life. You know, I think we need those now questions because especially with things like this, because there is sort of sometimes this ebb and flow, isn't there, to things like generosity, right? Sometimes this journey, it goes up and down, right? There are times and seasons when I think we probably all find ourselves heading in that wrong direction, and we need someone to ask us this question. What direction are we headed? What direction? So I ask you, what direction has your life been moving in lately? Has it been heading in the right direction? If you look back, let's just say over this last year, or this last, maybe these last 2 years, 3 years, whatever, have you seen yourself moving the right direction? Have you found yourself increasing in generosity? Have you seen that generosity flowing out of your life in a greater way? And don't just think money, okay? But even in your thinking, your mindset, and how you think and treat even your spouse, your husband, your wife, or your employees, that if you run a business, you know, what kind of thinking has been going on there lately? I tell you, these times we live in, it's hard, man. It's hard to keep our thinking going the right direction, isn't it? It's hard. What direction has your life been moving lately? And then that leads us, I think, to another question, which is really the more of the solution-oriented question. And I think this answer is going to look different for every single one of us. But the question is this: regardless of where you're at in that spectrum, here's the question I think we all got to ask ourselves. What would it look like for me? What would it look like for you to take just one step closer right now towards radical generosity? What would it look like? What would it look like to take just one step closer? Not 10 steps, not, you know, because sometimes it's easy for preachers to get up and say, you know, starting today, you're gonna, you know, and no one ever does it, right? Because it's unrealistic. But the question is, what would it look like to take just one step closer towards radical generosity in your life? One step. Now, a couple years ago, some of you will remember, because you were a big part of this, we led our church through a initiative. It was over a year long, I think a year and a half, called the Generosity Challenge. And man, that was a great 18 months for us, because there were three areas that we really were challenged in to embrace generosity towards. And what I loved about these areas is they gave us some very tangible ways to and practical ways to look for opportunities to be generous. And we need those, don't we? I mean, we need practical ways to live this out. And so what I want to do is I want to ask the same question, and I want to plug in those three areas, because I think those are three areas that we'll consistently keep in front of us, okay? But that question right here, let's put that question back up, Dave. What would it look like for me to take one step closer towards radical generosity? The first one would be this: in my everyday life, in my living, just my everyday life, what would it look like to embrace radical generosity in my living? Would you say that word with me? Let me just pray for you right now. Now, what I'm talking about in your living, that's so vague, right? So think apart from organized church programs, okay, or events or things. Those are good. We'll talk about those in a minute. But what I'm talking about is, what would it look like to live with your eyes and your ears wide open to those everyday opportunities, whether it's in your neighborhood, whether it's in your workplace, whether it's in your, you know, people you hear about who are in need, whatever it is, what would it look like? Listen, what would it look at me, not the people who have to go out. Listen, what would it look like to live with a proactive posture of finding ways to unleash generosity to the people around us? I'd say there's so many of you doing this. Oh my gosh, I love hearing stories. I mean, I remember a time when this wasn't happening all that often. At least we weren't hearing about it. I'm hearing about it all the time right now. Man, people who are taking personal initiative, not a church thing, but totally on their own initiative, and they're reaching out with hearts of generosity. I heard just a couple days ago, Pam Melvin. Is Pam here? I saw Dave. Oh, she's not here. I'm just kidding. You tell her I asked about her in church today. But I heard Pam, Dave's wife, Pam. I mentioned you the other week too, actually. You guys are awesome, man. Taking people to El Salvador, the passion you have for that, Dave, is awesome, man. But Dave's wife, his better half, Pam, no, listen, you know what I heard? She just decided to personally pull together a bunch of people and fill up shoeboxes with gifts for needy children around the world. And they ended up putting together over 50, was it right? Over 50 boxes, Dave? How many people would help with that? You don't know. So many you can't even count, right? No, there's a lot of people got together and helped. She took initiative. I mean, that's awesome. I don't know how many of you saw just yesterday on Facebook, that picture of these orchard women, right? Is it there? Yeah. Look at them. Okay, so these ladies, they said, hey, I don't even know how it all went down. I might even have my story wrong, but they just decided completely on their own to get together and have breakfast with a mission. And so they ended up making baskets filled with gifts and different things, basic necessities for local homeless women and women with children. Man, tell me that's not awesome. That's worth celebrating, isn't it? Come on. Awesome, man. Awesome. Way to go. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Taking initiative and looking for opportunities. Don't wait around for the church opportunity. Just build relationships with people in the community, and you'll be amazed at what opens up and ways for you to be a blessing, all right? Now, let's go to the next one, okay? So we talk about living, being generous in our living. Here's the next one. What would it look like for me to take one step towards radical generosity in my serving? All right, say this word together. Ready? Serving. Now, which in our context as a church community means, on one hand, serving right here in our church community, all right? Helping to contribute using your talent. All right, some of you would say, I don't have any talent. Yes, you do. And we'll help you figure out what that is. Everybody has talent, right? Everybody has an artist within them, all right? You might not be able to paint, but you have an artist in here that can do something great, all right? And so serving is about helping contribute using your talents, your giftings, your abilities to help create the most irresistible environments we can here. Man, I'll tell you what. I don't know if you realize this, but it takes... I mean, the majority of what you see happen around here is done by our volunteers. It literally takes every month hundreds of people to give of their time and of their talent to make this place happen, okay? I mean, it's amazing how much is done through the work of volunteers. We have a very, very small staff, especially for the size of church. And so whether it's in our family ministry, oh, man, I tell you what, watching where that's going is blowing my mind. Man, our student ministry, I mean, Rob, where's Rob, man? That guy, you guys, Rob and Karen, you guys have plugged in so faithfully. So many of you, I shouldn't have started naming names because now I'm seeing so many of you that have just poured and poured and poured. And I think we should just take a moment right now and we should just celebrate those who've given of their time and their talent right now. Come on. Let me tell you something. As I say to you as a parent, okay, not just as a pastor, but as a parent, I'm so thankful. I am so thankful that I know my kids, they're not being babysat, okay? They're being poured into with a ton of love and a ton of care. And my son, my Lord, he's a little preacher towards me, okay? Dad, well, I'm not going to tell you what he said, but anyway, he... keeps me in line. Serving. But then also they're serving outside of these walls, right? So what would it look like to serve not just internally, but what would it look like to serve in our local community? There's so many opportunities to serve. Sorry, there's the bugs flying around. But there's so many opportunities to serve out in our community, man, whether it's in our Gift Mart, our, you know, Triple Threat we've partnered with, things like Feed My Starving Children, so many different things. And I'll tell you, here's what I realized. There's some things we could do to help make this easier for you and more apparent when these opportunities come up. And so recently, we created a new role here at the Orchard that we're calling this person our serving activist. And the serving activist, in fact, we've already have someone who's functioning in this role right now, and their primary job responsibility, it's a volunteer role, but their primary job responsibility is to champion serving here at the Orchard, to champion serving here within the church community, and to champion serving outside of these walls, and we're really, really excited about that. And so you're going to see over these next few months that the opportunities to serve are going to become much more apparent and easier to get plugged in here, okay? All right, now let me go to the third one, this third area. And I think it's probably is the most important area that we ought to ask this question in relation to. What would it look like for me to take one step closer towards radical generosity in my giving? Did you say that word with me? Giving. You said that like you said greed. I don't like it. Come on, let's say it again. Ready? Now, you might wonder, well, of course, you're the pastor of the church. You're going to say this is the most important one. Well, here's the thing. I did not write the Bible. I know that's hard to believe, okay? But I did not write the Bible. But here's what those scriptures would tell us. The scriptures would say to us very clearly that the way in which we use our money is one of the most telling and significant signs of what's happening internally with our lives. All right? That's why Jesus said so much about it. Talked a ton about it. There's one passage in particular. We've looked at this one numerous times. We've looked at it a lot. You know how there's those passages you read in the Bible that you read it and you go, man, I wish I wouldn't have read it because now I'm accountable for knowing this, right? Well, this is one of those, and now you're all going to know it even if you didn't before, okay? But here's what it is. Jesus is talking about our money, our treasure, our resources, and this is what he says in Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. In other words, don't be so focused on constantly making things that are temporary your main priority, because they're not gonna last, you know. You're not gonna take any of that with you, you know. When's the last time you saw a hearse pulling a U-Haul? You don't take it, right? The only thing you take with you into eternity is people, right? Relationships and people. So that's what he's saying. Like, make that your priority. And in verse 21, he sums it all up, and he says these words. I want us to read it together. Verse 21, ready? For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Read it again. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know what Jesus is saying right there? He's saying something really, really powerful. He's saying, and very convicting, he's saying that your heart and your treasure are connected. Your heart and your money, your stuff, your things, your resources, they're connected. There's no way around it. They're connected. Right? You want to know what someone's really passionate about? Take a look at their checkbook. Right? Take a look at their credit card statement. Right? Check out where their money's going. You'll find out very quickly what someone's passionate about. Some of you are like, well, my all mine go to bills, and I'm not passionate about bills. But okay. But this is the truth. Your heart always follows your money. Always, right? And can I tell you something though? Let me tell you what I see as a pastor all the time, and for years I've seen this, and I don't believe it has to always be this way, but for the most part, this area of our giving, of putting God first in the area of our finances, this area that Jesus speaks so much about is almost, for the majority of people anyway, I think, is almost always the very last area that people truly surrender to God. Last. If ever. You know, and don't get me wrong, there's other areas that are hard to surrender, but I'll tell you, this is a tough one for a lot of people. And I see people, God, you can have my mind. God, I give you my fear, Lord, my marriage, take my husband, Lord. Please, Lord, you can have my kids, you know, but whatever it is, but I'll tell you what, when it comes to our money, man, that's a tough one. For so many of us. So, some of you, you've done it. You found freedom in this. But a lot of us, we haven't. We haven't taken that step of surrender. And so this is an area, I think, and I, you know, we don't talk about this stuff, I think, probably nearly as much as we ought to. But I'll tell you what, man, this is an area I think we got to constantly be challenged in. Because here's what I think. Listen, here's the picture I have, all right? Can you imagine... Can you imagine what might happen in our lives if instead of making this area the last area of surrender to God, can you imagine what would happen if we were to actually make it one of the first areas of surrender? Okay, because think about this for a second, right? If what Jesus said is true, if it's true that our hearts are connected to our money, then imagine what putting God first in the area of our finances. And what would happen, making his priority, our priorities, imagine how that would impact every other area of your life. And that's why I say to people, like, this is not about the church wants your money. This is about what God wants. God doesn't need your money. Are you kidding me? Like, God's not sitting up there having economic hardships. He's not scratching his head going, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Man, times are tough. What are we going to do? No, listen. God's fine. God doesn't need your money, but you know what he does need? God needs and wants your heart. And he knows that if he has your money, he will have your heart, friend. And I'll tell you, I know it's not always easy. I know. Hasn't always been easy for me. Thankfully, I was raised, and some of you could say this too, I was raised in a home. My parents modeled this for me. They taught me real well in this area. And even now, sometimes it's not real always easy, but I can tell you what it has always been for sure. It has always been extremely freeing. So freeing. Because listen, when you really get this, and some of you, you're living in this, you know what I'm talking about, all right? But when a community of people get this, really start to get this, watch out. Watch out, because something really, really powerful can happen. Because let me tell you something, what God can do with a group of people who are radically generous with their lives, it has the potential to not only change, well, just a few hundred people or a few thousand people. It has the potential to literally change an entire city and even, I think, the world. Listen, there's no way to talk about this without going to one more passage I think we have to hit that I think is probably one of the most beautiful pictures of generosity and what it actually causes to play out. I think it's probably one of the most beautiful pictures found anywhere in the scriptures of what happens when people are committed to generosity flowing through their lives. And I want to show you, so this is the early church, and it is absolutely one of my favorite passages of scripture. Acts chapter 4, verse 32. All the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own. So they shared everything they had. Verse 33, the apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. Don't you love that phrase? God's great blessing was upon them all. Verse 34, there were no needy people among them, because those who own land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. That's a beautiful picture. Man, believers who are united around the one thing that surpasses all the differences we have, because we're different, we're unique, right? The one thing that surpasses our political, choices, right? You name it, right? I mean, it wasn't the 30-page doctrinal statement that everybody was rallying around, right? Because there's room for different ideas and beliefs. That's okay. There's some core things we got to hold to, but there's a lot of flexibility there on other things. But these are believers who were united around the one thing that surpassed all of that, Jesus. And man, what we see here, and what I think enabled them to actually live this out, and what's going to enable us to actually live this out, is the exact same thing. It's what's said right at the beginning. Put that back up real quick, Dave. Right at the beginning of this passage where it says these words, all right, look. And they felt that what they owned was not their own. Would you read that with me? And they felt that what they owned was not their own. This is huge. Right? See, this spirit of radical generosity that we see here, you know where it came from? It came from this realization that everything they had came from God and belonged to God. Everything they had came from God and belonged to God, which meant that everything, little bit that they had, a lot that they had, I would imagine that little boy with the loaves and fish, right? He believed the same thing, right? This woman who gave the two coins, the same thing, that everything they had belonged to God, and it came from God, and everything they had belonged to him, which meant that at the end of the day, all the stuff that we like to think is ours, it really isn't. It all belongs to God. We are not owners. We are simply managers. We're stewards. And I'll tell you something, when you really get that, I mean, look, I'm telling you, this is the experience of my own life. And I'm not saying I have it perfected by any means, but I'm going to tell you, when you get that, there is a huge amount of freedom that you'll experience in your life. Huge amount. Huge amount of freedom in recognizing that everything you have in life, that God is my source. I'm thankful for my job. I'm thankful for the ways that God blesses me. But at the end of the day, God is my source, which means that no matter what happens out here, I don't have to freak out. I don't have to become doom and gloom. I don't have to panic, okay? I don't have to jump into scarcity thinking because God is my source. The government's not my source, okay? The stock market is not my source. My job ultimately is not my source. My source is God. There's freedom in that. Everything in my life, clothes that I'm wearing, car that I drive, the home that I live in, everything belongs to God, all of it. And I'll tell you what, it is in that freedom that allows us to hold on to all that stuff with a very light grip. And I'll tell you something, that picture that we see in that early church, I refuse to believe that that picture is just a picture that we read and feel excited about because it's something inspirational that happened a long time ago. No, we believe that this is a picture of what God can do today with a group of people who truly live, not as owners, but as managers, as stewards, who are committed to moving towards this direction of radical generosity. So here's the thing. Sometimes a talk like this, you know, it can feel kind of vague and ambiguous, not quite sure, where do I start? Well, what I think we have to do is point out whenever there are real obvious steps around us to do this, and so I want to do that as we close, all right? First of all, a couple that I can tell you about. One of those, a step you can take right now, is you can walk outside those doors, not yet, when I dismiss, I mean, walk out those doors, and you can sign up to be part of the Gift Mart that you heard us talk about. You remember the real good-looking guy in the video a few minutes ago was telling you about Gift Mart, right? That's a great opportunity. It's so easy. You walk out, you sign up in the Information Center. That's a way to take a practical step. All right, now listen, and then next weekend, I'm going to share with you something really exciting, okay? It's an opportunity that we have to make a big difference financially within our church community, but also around the world between now and the end of the year. And I know there's not a lot of time left, but it's going to be a very simple way for us to join together and make a huge impact, okay? And I'll tell you, we'll hear more about that next weekend, but I want you to keep that in the back of your mind and throughout this next week, okay? And then there's an opportunity right now, all right? And that is an opportunity for each of us to take a step as we close out our gathering. We're going to give back to God. Now, I know that some of you might say, well, I see how they worked it today. Yeah, talk about money, and now they're going to give, right? Yes, you're right. And I'll tell you what, if you find yourself kind of feeling funny about that, that's all right. Don't give. It's all right. This is for those of you who trust this place and you know our hearts, okay? We'd be foolish not to use that as an opportunity to allow you to take a step of faith. And I promise you, those of you who are giving, you're a lot more excited about your giving now than you were, well, several minutes ago. All right? But that's what we're going to do. We're going to worship. And here's the thing, all right? Try not to be distracted by these amazing musicians here that are walking up on the stage. But listen, this is an act of worship. We say that every weekend, all right? Because what we're doing is we're declaring exactly what we saw in that beautiful picture in Acts, right? This group of people, this generosity was flowing through these people. They recognized and they declared and they said, God, everything we have in life, it comes from you and it belongs to you. And that's why we say giving back to God, because it all belongs to God. And so when we give, we're choosing to put him first. Say, God, we're putting you number one. So here's the thing. I want to take a second. I want to challenge those of you who've never surrendered this area of your life. I want to challenge you to not wait any longer. I want to challenge you to take a step. And for some of you, that might mean committing to regular weekend giving. saying, all right, I'm going to put God first no matter what. I'm going to get in the rhythm. All right, for others, maybe it's saying, you know what, I've gotten comfortable in my giving, and so I'm going to go to the next level. I'm going to give more. I'm not feeling it enough. My wife and I, we constantly are talking about this. How do we move closer and closer and closer towards radical generosity? And for some of you, it might even mean that you just try it out and see what happens in your life and see what God might do. And I'm going to tell you, we know it's hard, so we've worked hard to make it easy for you. In fact, on the seats, because we know a lot of people come to church, they don't have cash. I don't care on cash that much, right? I'm a pastor, you know. But you know, a lot of people don't carry around cash or their checkbook. So what we've done is we've tried to make it real easy. On the seat in front of you is a envelope, and you, right on there, you can sign up for automated giving. And I'd say some of you, you might be feeling that tug, all right? This is not one of those things where you got to go, well, I don't know, I just need to discern that. It could be the devil telling me to do this. No, it's not, okay? And it's not your flesh. We wouldn't tell ourselves to be generous. We'd tell ourselves to hold on, right? So anyway, go with it. If God's telling you to take a step, and you can sign up, if you want to do automated giving, if you want to give one time, you want to go give ongoing, use a debit card or check card or whatever, checking account, there's a way to do that right on those envelopes in front of you, all right? And so all that, guys, to say, don't wait to take a step that I believe is one of the most important steps you could ever take in your life. So let's take a moment. Let's bow our heads. Let's take a moment right now, and let's do exactly what we say this moment is. This is an act of worship and an opportunity to respond. And so, God, together, as your people, we join together right now, and we... I think it's important as a community for us to just declare to you and to say that, God, you are our source. And I know, God, there's some here in our community who are really hurting financially, and they're even afraid, and they found themselves maybe even being pushed over into a place of scarcity, and they come in here today kind of discouraged about this. I pray, God, that right now you would just encourage them, and you would remind them that you are their source, and that every gift comes from you and belongs to you. And so I pray even for us as a community that we'd be responsive. God, we hear about those in need, that we'd respond and we would take part, that we wouldn't just say, well, let's pray for those in need, but we would always take time to consider, maybe we're the ones who are supposed to help answer this prayer and fill this need. And so, God, thanks for this time to give. We declare, like the psalmist says, the earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all its people, belong to you, God. And so may we be people who avoid looking at life through the lenses of scarcity, and instead may we choose to celebrate the abundance that, God, that you have blessed us with. We pray that now. We ask these things. In your son's name, and everyone said... Amen. Amen.